We'll hear arguments next in 5761, Simpson against the United States, and 5796, the consolidated case. You may proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the question that I present to the court today is whether or not an individual can be charged, convicted, and sentenced under the aggravated bank robbery statute 182113D, and additionally charged, convicted, and sentenced under 924C1 for using a firearm during the commission of a felony. The tenor of our argument has changed somewhat from a double jeopardy question to a question of multiplicity or duplicity. But I still think that the dictates of the Blockberger case are applicable in that you must show that each offense requires proof of an element that the other does not. And it has been our contention since the inception of this case that in order to sustain a conviction under 924C1, that all of the elements under 2113D must be proven. Now, the Fourth and Fifth Circuit and the Sixth Circuit in following the Fourth and the Fifth Circuit, in their opinion in the lower court, stated that they thought that there was a difference in proof of the elements. And they based their decision on the language contained in 2113, wherein the government is required to prove that an individual's life was endangered by the use of a dangerous weapon or device, and that a dangerous weapon or device was not always a firearm. And it's my contention that in getting to the elements in 2113D, that you have to prove every single one of them to prove that the felony in 924C was committed, and that you can't sit back and judge the facts of each case in a vacuum. You have to look at the weapon that was used. And when a firearm or a handgun is used, it fits both in 2113D and 924C.
Well, then you say the Blockberger test is not one where you compare the statutes, but where you simply compare the evidence in each particular case.
Now, I think the test it's set down in Blockberger is that you compare the statutes.
Well, then I don't see how you can advance the proposition that you compare the weapon involved in each particular case. Because here, clearly, a dangerous weapon or device includes other things than a firearm.
That is correct. But I do say that you have to look at the factual elements and fit them into the statutes. You have to draw the statutes sufficiently broad to encompass all the factual situations that may occur. But I don't think that in viewing 924C as opposed to 2113D, you can just say, suppose something else was used.
Well, then it is a case-by-case, exhibit-by-exhibit test, so far as you're concerned.
I believe that that interpretation can be used and should be used in a case where the facts don't really fit into either one of them.
Well, your submission is, as I understood it, that whenever the weapon is a firearm, then these charges are necessarily duplicitous.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly my position.
What if it were a hand grenade?
Well, then I don't think you could prosecute under 924C because that specifically has to be a firearm. I do think that the legislators in drafting 2113D had to have thought that the most common weapon or dangerous weapon or device to be used would be a handgun or a firearm or a rifle or a shotgun, something that would be encompassed by 924C. I think that we see it on TV and we read about it occasionally, other weapons are used to rob banks, and usually they are more dangerous than a firearm.
But it's only when the firearm is involved that this question could ever arise, because that's the only time that 924 is involved.
That is correct.
That's your point, isn't it?
That's exactly my point.
And my brother Stuart asked you a question a moment ago, which I'm sure he knew the meaning of, and which you doubtless knew the meaning of, but which I think I didn't understand the meaning of one of the words of, and that is that the indictment is necessarily duplicitous in this context. What does that mean?
I
think maybe I used the wrong word.
Well, I think it is duplicitous or multiplicitous.
Yeah. What does that mean?
That they're charging two distinct crimes out of the same offense.
And what's the objection to that? Blockburger?
Mm-hmm. Bell and Bell against the United States, cases like that.
Any other objections?
I think I stated it simply to the district court, and again in Cincinnati, that they've charged the petitioners here with robbing a bank using a gun and using a gun to rob a bank. And I think that is duplicitous. I think you can adopt the lesser included offense arguments and saying that, you know, the elements in manslaughter are the same as murder, but you ought to be required to go one way or the other. I think you, in looking at the legislative history, the United States has said that you should not put much weight on Representative Popp's comments. He was the sponsor of the 924C amendment, and my case rests on part on his comments in legislative history, where he says it should be noted for legislative history that my amendment is not to apply, and he named several additional statutes in addition to the 2113D statute.
Where was that statement by Representative Popp made, Constance? You know, I was on the floor.
I believe it was during the floor debate.
During the floor debate.
And there was, as pointed out in counsel for the government's brief, an abrupt cessation of talking about that amendment or that part of it. They just went right on to another part of it.
Is there any kind of a weapon or any kind of a dangerous device that could be used, in your view, that would be sustainable with convictions under both sections, as you have here? At least you're arguing that when it's a firearm, a pistol, for example, there can't be two. Is there any kind of a weapon or device that would warrant the conviction under both sections?
Mr. Chief Justice, I do not believe that there is. I believe that Congress provided the enhanced penalty under 2113D if any sort of weapon, dangerous weapon or device, was used and endangered anybody's life. And I think that 924C was enacted in response to the growing concern for the use of firearms specifically in committing crimes. And I have to agree with Representative Popp's comments that it was not intended to be used in cases where there was already an enhanced punishment provided. Since the time of submission of our briefs, I was sent a copy of a letter written from the Department of Justice to the United States Attorney in Maryland, Bial, wherein the Department of Justice said it was their policy not to prosecute on a 924C charge when the principal offense was a 2113D charge. And they cited the general principle of law that when a specific statute and a general statute are involved in the same set of facts, that the general statute should be used. And additionally, they cited Representative Popp's comments. Now, I think that the legislative history in enacting these statutes should be considered in cases where the statement that Congress best means what it says has to be looked at when you can't really determine what Congress says. Now, in a case of this nature, where the government is arguing that they don't mean what they say and that you should not listen to Representative Popp's comments, And the fact that you do have what on its face is a conflict that this court has to use the tools that are available to it to determine exactly what they did mean. And as I have stated before, I think that they have created an absurdity, and they could carry it one step farther by stating that whoever uses a Saturday night special, which costs less than $50, shall be guilty of an additional offense. And I think that would fall in line with the logic that has been used in allowing a 924C charge to be tacked on to a 2113D charge. And basically, I rest my case on Representative Popp's comments and the absurdity that's committed when you let a person be charged with robbing a bank using a gun and using a gun to rob a bank.
What if the indictment had been on the, this was 924C1?
Yes, Your Honor.
What if the indictment under C2?
Well, that was the case, I believe, in the Crewe case, where they, the Fourth Circuit said that that was perfectly acceptable.
And do you agree with that?
No, Your Honor, I don't.
Well, because under the 2113, you have to put someone's life in jeopardy.
Your Honor, and I think that is conditioned on using the gun. It says by the use of a dangerous weapon or device, and I think that when you use a dangerous weapon or a device, you automatically put somebody's life in danger.
When you use
well,
it?
Yeah, but 924C says carries a firearm.
The two charge?
Yes.
Well,
You don't have to use it while you're robbing the bank.
I can see the circumstance where it would be, say, in your pocket. Then I don't think they could charge him under 2113D. And I think there's a further fact in this case is that the indictment itself specified that the dangerous weapon or device was a handgun under the 2113D charge, and then specified that the firearm was a handgun under the 924C charge, and so that they removed any possible distinction or difference between the two in each statute.
Mr. Wilmot, do I understand from your comment before the Brother White's question that absent Congressman Poff's comment, you would not be here?
No, Your Honor. I say that I rely
you
heavily.
You relied basically on it, and I wanted to be sure of your status.
No, Your Honor, I do rely heavily on it, and we were not aware of Congressman Poff's comments until the decision in the Eagle case came down.
And if the congressman had not made his statement, you would be here anyway?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then you would rely on what?
Our argument that it is duplicitous and possibly places a person in double jeopardy by trying him twice for the same offense at the same time.
Do you feel the Eighth Circuit case in Eagle is essentially at odds with this case, or is it rather a
I think
a
it is on all fours with this case. Thank you.
Mr. Farr.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. Within a two-month period in the fall of 1975, petitioners in this case robbed two banks in Middlesboro, Kentucky. They carried and used firearms in the commission of each robbery, and while attempting to escape from the second robbery, engaged in an exchange of gunfire with the police. Petitioners' conduct quite plainly violated several provisions of federal law, and the juries in both cases so found. In each instance, petitioners were convicted under 18 U.S.C. 2113A, which makes it a felony to rob a federal bank, and under 18 U.S.C. 2113D, which provides an increased penalty for anyone who, while robbing a federal bank, in the words of the statute, assaults any person or puts in jeopardy the life of any person by the use of a dangerous weapon or device. Petitioners were also convicted under 18 U.S.C. 924C1, a part of the Gun Control Act of 1968, which provides an additional term of imprisonment for anyone who, in the words of that statute, uses a firearm to commit any felony for which he may be prosecuted in a court of the United States. The trial judge sentenced petitioners to the maximum terms of imprisonment allowed for each crime, 25 years for each offense under Section 2113D, and another 10 years for each offense under Section 924C, all sentences to be served consecutively. Petitioners have attacked their sentences on the ground that 924C, while seeming on its face to apply to any federal felony, is not available to punish bank robbers whose use of firearms has made them subject to punishment under Section 2113D as well. They rely for this proposition on a statement by Congressman Poff, who sponsored Section 924C on the House floor, that his bill was not intended to apply to various federal offenses, of which bank robbery under Section 2113 is one. This argument, in our view, raises two questions. First, did Congress intend Section 924C apply to bank robbers simultaneously subject to conviction under Section 2113D? And if Congress did so intend, secondly, does the Double Jeopardy Clause in any way prohibit that result? For reasons that we shall discuss in a moment, we believe that the intent of Congress to punish for both offenses is evident from the statute itself and from the weight of the legislative history. And we furthermore believe that the Double Jeopardy Clause does not prohibit it from doing so. Looking at the language of Section 924C, we do not perceive any serious question about the meaning of the statute on its face. Indeed, we do not understand petitioners today to say anything to the contrary. By its terms, it applies to any felony for which a person may be prosecuted in a court of the United States, a definition that plainly includes all degrees of bank robbery. Had this case been argued before this court 50 or 75 years ago, that clear language would likely have been not the starting but the stopping place for an inquiry into congressional intent, according to the rigid and venerable dictates of the plain meaning rule. Although that rule no longer commands absolute allegiance, even today we think that the language of a statute must remain the most secure evidence of the legislative intent. As Justice Jackson stated, it is the business of Congress to sum up its own debates in its legislation. And where Congress is unable to do so clearly.
Mr. Farr, could I interrupt?
Yes.
Supposing a man was indicted for violating 924C2, carrying a firearm, could he, for the same transaction, also be indicted for violating 924C1?
That is the situation that came up in the Crewe case, Your Honor, and the Fourth Circuit held that he could not.
Well, do you think that decision is right?
I think in terms of whether he could be indicted, it perhaps may not be right, but I think he could not properly be convicted and consecutively sentenced for both the violation of C1 and C2. I think it might be permissible to indict him so that you can see what the proof shows.
But don't each of those two sections have an element the other does not? One has he has to carry it, and the other he has to use it. I suppose you could use it without carrying it.
If someone else orders to shoot or something like that?
Well, I think that even if that were true, that there is no evidence that Congress intended, in fact, to get at the situation you were carrying one yourself and also.
Well, what other than the literal language of the statute? I mean, then you're not relying on the literal language. What evidence is there that Congress intended to get at 2113D?
Well, I think we are not necessarily relying, we're not suggesting that you can rely only on the language of 924C in order to support this. In fact, we agree that one of the situations which Congressman Poff posits, which would be other offenses set forth in the Gun Control Act of 1968 itself, might be situations in which the congressional intent was really not to impose punishment for 924C and perhaps purchasing a gun. In other words, offenses that can't be committed without a gun in the first place. However, we don't reach that conclusion by reliance on what Congressman Poff said directly, but by the fact that, one, it seems to lead to somewhat awkward results, two, the fact that it does seem to go beyond the congressional purpose in this case, which is to attach some additional penalty. So we're doing it really by a construction of the statute in light of its overall purpose and the evils of which it was directed, not simply by relying on one statement by the sponsor of the bill.
Is there anything, any place to show how many bank robberies are made with non-lethal weapons?
I don't have any statistics on that.
Have you ever heard of any?
Well, I think it's possible to... Sure. You say non-lethal weapons, meaning not a firearm?
Non-lethal. Not those mentioned in this statute, but let's pin it down.
By 924C. Uh-huh. Well, I think there probably are some bank robberies that are committed with knives or with some sort of blunt instruments, but I would think the majority of them would be committed with a firearm. But I also should point out that...
Well, how does that cut to you?
Pardon me?
Does that help or hurt you?
As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't necessarily make any difference. It seems
you
to
think
me
the Congress meant to put an additional penalty on robberies that were normally going on?
I think Congress meant...
They could have just changed the statute.
I think Congress meant to put an additional penalty on any crime that was committed with a firearm.
Well, then it seems to me that if they wanted to put it on the bank robbery, they could have raised it, couldn't they?
They could, in fact, have done that. They could have gone through the United States Code and added an additional penalty to every single offense that was in it.
I'm talking about bank robbery.
They could have done it with bank robbery, and they could have done it with any other offense. What they did instead, in our belief, is that it passed a single statute that applied to any felony and therefore just did it in one piece of legislation rather than numerous pieces. But they could have done it the way you suggested. I agree. Returning for a moment to the discussion of the plain meaning rule, I was about to suggest that where Congress has not been able to state its meaning clearly in a statute, or where by reading the statute in connection with the congressional purpose, it obviously leads to awkward results, or indeed where the subject of the legislation is so complex that Congress cannot reasonably foresee and provide for all matters that will ultimately arise, some relaxation of the plain meaning rule is inevitably necessary.
I might suggest that 10 years is not, quote, awkward, end quote. This is more than an awkward result. This is 10 years out of a man's life.
Well, I'm not suggesting that this is an awkward result, Mr. Justice Marshall. I think that in this particular case that Congress is aiming to impose what is not an awkward result but a reasonable result on people who use guns to commit crimes. Where, however, as we believe it is true in this case, the objects of the legislation are not complex, the language is straightforward, and the results of adherence to the language of the statute are equally as reasonable, if not more so, than the results of departure from it, then it seems that the court should exercise great caution when it proceeds past the language of the statute to the legislative history. And therefore, we believe it's very important to examine carefully the legislative history, essentially Congressman Poff's statement that the petitioners in this case find so compelling, and to give it a proper place in the context of the passage of the Gun Control Act of 1968. And this perhaps will direct more to Mr. Justice Marshall's question about what Congress intended to do in these situations. We think it's first appropriate in doing that to examine the purpose of the Gun Control Act itself. In this context, there can be little doubt that about the evils which prompted enactment of the Gun Control Act. The problem, simply put, was guns. A Presidential Commission report published in February 1967 and considered by Congress in connection with the passage of several bills had set forth alarming figures on the use of guns to commit crimes, figures that had worsened by the end of that year. For example, the House report on the Gun Control Act showed that in the 13 months ending in September 1967, 50,000 people had been murdered or assaulted with guns, while a similar number of robberies, including bank robberies with guns, had taken place. The Senate report, using figures for all of 1967, showed over 60,000 murders and assaults and over 70,000 robberies, all committed with guns, an average of 150 armed assaults and 190 armed robberies each day. The House report, accompanying its version of the gun control bill, stated plainly that no civilized society can ignore the malignancy which this senseless slaughter reflects. We might also note that this concern was not confined to the Congress itself. The assassinations of Robert Kennedy and of Martin Luther King had mobilized public support for greater controls on firearms as well. Indeed, Senator Javits indicated that in 1 month alone, he received over 100,000 letters favoring gun registration. The overriding purpose of the act, therefore, was to take strong measures to inhibit the use of firearms in serious crimes. And those measures took two principal forms. First, greater federal controls over the sale and shipment of guns, provisions that are not at issue in this case.
Mr. Farr, could I just interrupt with another question?
Yes, Mr. Chief.
What would you describe as the purpose of Section 2113D?
I would think that the purpose of 2113D is to deter bank robbers from using dangerous weapons in connection with that. Not only bank robbers, but people committing any crime under 2113A and B, which includes larceny and attempts to commit robbery.
But it, to the extent that the most commonly used dangerous weapon in bank robberies is guns, the purpose is identical then, is it not?
Well, I think the purpose is identical if you assume that there is no purpose to add increased deterrence to something true. I mean, I think that the statistics show that the most commonly used weapon to commit murder is also a gun. But this, I don't think anybody would dispute that because this statute would also add a penalty to that crime, that it should be read not to include coverage of murder. The second measure that the Congress used to attack increase crime by use of guns was simply increasing the penalties for the use of the firearms in serious crimes. We do think it's significant, excuse me, that every court of appeals that has placed principal emphasis on the language and purpose of Section 924C has concluded that it is available to convict and punish bank robbers also subject to punishment under Section 2113D. In addition to the Sixth Circuit in this case, the Second Circuit, Fourth Circuit, and Fifth Circuit have so decided.
Well, Mr. Farr,
undoubtedly, perhaps as in this case, or perhaps not, there will be instances where the facts necessary to prove the crime under 2113 will be the identical facts which would be used to prove the crime under 924C. If you use a gun to rob a bank and put somebody's life in jeopardy, you're going to violate both sections.
That's correct. And in fact, this is a crime.
That in the particular instance, you don't have to prove any different facts to violate one section as compared with the other.
That's correct. But I think that is coincidental rather than something that derives directly from the requirements of the statute itself.
Well, it may be coincidental, but how about double jeopardy?
Well, I think that as the court said in Iannelli, if each statute requires a different element than the other does.
Well, it doesn't in this case.
The statute does. The statute requires proof of
a
different element.
Not in this case. Not in this case. To violate the statute, you don't have to prove any different facts.
Well, it seems to me that in order to prove, you have to prove certain different facts in order to prove a violation of the statute. The fact that you're able to prove them by the same evidence does not seem to me to put
you
in a double jeopardy
situation. You just don't have to prove any different facts in the situation that I pose to you. In other instances, you will have a crime under one that isn't a crime under the other. But in this instance, the same facts prove a violation of both statutes.
Well, as I say, it seems to me that there are situations. We're not suggesting that there will not be situations where the proof does not overlap. But it doesn't seem to me
Do they overlap in this case? The proof does overlap in this case.
We don't. There's no question about that. These people took a gun. The petitioners brought guns into the bank, used them to assault people while they were robbing the bank.
Is it enough, Mr. Farr, to put a person's life in jeopardy in robbing a bank to point the gun at somebody? Just to say, if you use the gun to commit the bank robbery, have you put a person's life in jeopardy?
If you're directing the gun at people, yes. I don't think that it's absolutely
Well, how do you
essential.
Use it otherwise?
Yeah. What other purpose does the bank robber have for having the gun except to believe that their lives are in jeopardy?
I mean, I assume that there are several reasons that he could be carrying a gun, whether he's going to use it or not.
I ask you about using it.
But in connection with using it, I suppose it's possible for him to use a gun for instance, to shoot open the door of a bank, to break the glass.
Well, doesn't he use it when he carries it in his hand, walking in the bank? Isn't he using it for the bank robbery?
In that case, he certainly would pull the trigger.
My
understanding of Justice White's question is, are there possible cases in which he could be carrying it and in which he would not be using it?
Well, how could he carry it without using it?
Well, to begin with, he could carry it in his pocket, but that would be a violation of Section C-2, not C-1.
Well, I'm just suggesting to you that even on the language of the statute, it's plain that there will be all sorts of instances where the proof is identical.
I think that's correct. I think that there will be numerous instances in which the proof is identical, but the fact is that there will be instances in which the proof is not identical.
Well, let me ask you this. In a charge of violation of 2113D, where the dangerous weapon or device is a firearm, won't it always, inevitably, universally, also include the same identical proof as necessary to prove a violation of 18 U.S.C. 924C1? Always. Inevitably and universally.
I think in the majority of cases it will. I'm not sure.
When possibly couldn't it?
It seems to me it's possible to use a gun in attempting to commit, for instance, a crime under the part of 2113A, which
requires more than just use of the gun, but it always does require use of the gun.
It does require use of the gun.
It requires use plus other things. And 924C1 requires use.
However, it requires use of the gun in a bank robbery.
Yes. As I say, use of a gun plus other elements.
Plus, that's right.
But use of the gun is a single element in 924C1.
That's right.
Always going to include it.
Well, if the statute said, if 2113D said, whoever puts anybody's life in jeopardy by the use of a firearm.
No, I say whenever the weapon is a firearm.
That, in fact, would be a different case. But the statute, of course, doesn't say that.
Inexorably, universally.
Right.
Right.
What about the argument that's made that Congress can now pass one that said if you use an automatic, that's a third one?
It does not seem to me that if Congress is able to pass a statute where the terms of the statute require proof of different elements, it seems to me that they are permitted to do that under the Double Jeopardy Clause. It doesn't strike me that the statute you're positing... It doesn't strike me that the statute you're positing would, in fact, it would be a different element in terms of that statute would have an additional element than 924C does, but I'm not sure what 924C would have. That it was an automatic.
I suppose it's in working condition.
That
just says a gun that's in working condition.
That would be an additional requirement that 924C does not have, but that statute does not have.
Well, suppose it says that the person assumed it was loaded.
Which person assumed that it was loaded?
The people in the bank.
Well, in other words, you can keep on spinning examples, Mr. Justice Marshall, that will add elements
to a particular crime. What I'm trying to tell you is I don't have to spin but the first one.
But the fact is that the fact that one crime contains an element that the first crime didn't does not mean that the reverse is true. And that's what the Double Jeopardy Clause
is. What I'm trying to emphasize is that in this one, it is identical.
It's identical. If 2113D said, if 2113D required that the weapon be a firearm, it seems to me it would be a different case. The fact that it may be a firearm.
But in this case, it is or was a firearm, so you don't have to theorize.
In this case, it was.
Where the weapon or device used under 2113D is a firearm, proof of the violation inevitably includes the single element of 924C1.
That is correct, but I don't...
And 1924 took the
C2. Probably.
Well, except that that has to be carried unlawfully, so it's not necessarily true. But it seems to me...
If you prove the robbery of a bank...
I'm not sure that makes the carrying of the firearm
Does
unlawful.
It mean to imply that if he had a license for the firearm, that it would be... That would give him some immunity under that one section?
That would certainly remove one of the possible ways in which the carrying would be unlawful.
As Mr. Justice White suggests, if he's carrying a gun in a bank in the course of a bank robbery, doesn't the unlawful aspect taint everything?
Well, I think that's part of what we're trying to find out in this case.
Anyway, you haven't answered Mr. Justice Stewart yet on why that C1 wouldn't be included in the bank robbery crime any time it's the gun that he uses.
Well, any time that it's a gun, I mean, if you take a situation and posit all the facts as to being identical, or even posit some of them as being identical, you can make the statutes dovetail. The fact is that the statutes do not have to dovetail, though. It seems to me the question that Congress is entitled to define crimes differently and still remain flexible under the Double Jeopardy Clause, even though the elements of proof may substantially overlap. And, in fact, it seems that the Court said that in Ianelli.
Mr. Farr, could I ask it from the other point of view?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
You stress the fact that use of a firearm is an element in 924C. Putting life in jeopardy is the element in 2113D. The elements are different, therefore, even though the act is the same, they're two different offenses. But is it possible that one could use a firearm and that fact be brought before the jury, and that fact itself is sufficient proof of putting a life in jeopardy, so there really is no difference between the two elements? Would it not be a sufficient an instruction to the jury on the issue of when has someone's life been put in jeopardy? Wouldn't a judge be correct in instructing a jury that merely evidence showing that a firearm had been used is sufficient to establish the kind of jeopardy that 2113D is?
I don't think so
during the commission of a bank robbery?
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on what the facts of the robbery were.
You don't think that you have to fire the firearm, do you?
Pardon me?
You aren't contending that 2113D requires the firearm to be fired.
No, we're not contending that.
It just has to be used during the...
That's correct.
Life in jeopardy. As soon as it's used, someone's life's in jeopardy, and also you've established the element in 924C.
I think in most cases that will be true, but I don't think that it's...
Well, when would it not be true? That you use a firearm in a bank robbery without putting anyone's life in jeopardy within the meaning of the statute.
What is perhaps a strained example, but I think one that's legitimate under the facts, if you used a firearm to shoot open the door to a bank and broke in,
and you don't think
evidence
of that could be taken as sufficient to show jeopardy to life?
Not if there was nobody in the bank, no.
The Blockburger case wasn't a double jeopardy case, was it?
The Blockburger case was not a double jeopardy case.
But it's been used in subsequent.
But it seems to me, for instance,
discussion.
In Gore, that it was used. Clearly, they used the same sort of arguments to deal with it in a double jeopardy context. And in Brown versus Ohio last year, it seems to me the Court quite plainly stated that was the test. But I think in looking at speaking of Gore, it seems to me that provides a different way of looking at this statute. It seems to me that Congress is free in defining crimes and fixing punishments to pass a statute that says if you rob a bank, you face a maximum penalty of 20 years. If you use a dangerous weapon in the course of that, 25 years. And if that weapon is a gun, 35 years is the maximum penalty. And it doesn't seem to me that the effects of this statute are necessarily any different than that one.
What about this communication we were told about from the Justice Department to the U.S. Attorney?
Ms. Justice Stewart, I'm unaware of that letter. We did not get a copy of it from petitioners.
Have we been supplied with a copy of it?
I'm sorry?
Have the members of the Court been supplied with copies of it?
No, Your Honor.
I
assumed when
not.
Counsel referred to that it was something that was had been made available. If not, it certainly should be, if any reliance is placed on it.
It's something that has not been made available to me. Now, I understand from what Petitioner's Counsel said this afternoon about it that it is a policy statement by the Department of Justice.
Well, I'd be interested in seeing it, or hearing from you that there is no such thing.
And I will, if I can have a copy of it from Petitioner's Counsel to help me track it down, I will find out what it involves and report to the Court.
And will you make it available?
I'd like to point out, before the questioning started a few moments ago, I was discussing the figures that were in front of Congress showing the increasing number of crimes committed with guns. And I pointed out in the course of that among the most serious figures, which Congress specifically included in its reports, were figures relating to armed robberies and aggravated assaults. Now, were Congressman Poff's statements about the scope of Section 924C allowed to override the language of the statute. In fact, the congressional solution to the problem they perceived would be much narrower than the problem it addressed.
Mr. Farr, could I ask, I'm sorry to keep interrupting
you, but
the figures relate to crimes like armed robbery and assault. The statute relates to use of a firearm in a felony for which you can be prosecuted in a federal court.
That's correct.
Now, are most of these armed robberies and assaults federal offenses?
I would think that most of them, that this includes federal and state offenses, and I would think that...
So most of those figures really are not relevant to what the ultimate statute came out
of. I don't think the figures in terms of their absolute numbers are necessarily relevant.
Do the figures tell us how many of those assaults were in violation of federal law?
The figures do not, no. But what the figures do is indicate that there is a substantial problem with which Congress was concerned. Now, it dealt with the state problem and the federal problem with the licensing requirements, but obviously didn't feel that that was sufficient to take care of all the crimes, because it did add a Section 924C that applies to federal crimes alone. So we're not suggesting that it will affect every crime, but that the problem was both state and federal, and Congress recognized
it. It didn't show that there was an increase in bank robberies with guns.
The figures specifically did not, no. But Congressman Poff's
remarks...
That's
what we're talking about.
Well, we are talking about that in this particular case, but Congressman Poff, in fact, was talking about something more than that, because he said that his statute would not only be inapplicable to bank robberies under Section 2113, but certain other robberies, including armed robberies of the mails, and also to virtually all armed assaults under all of the federal assault statutes. So that in order to accept his version of 924C, you would have to believe that though Congress was very concerned about the rise in crimes, including armed robberies and armed assaults, that it deliberately enacted legislation which would not apply to federal armed robberies, most of them, or some at least bank robberies and mail robberies, or federal assaults, which does not strike me as making much sense. We also pointed out in our brief that the other amendments introduced on this subject do not make any such distinction between felonies that already have a penalty for use of a dangerous weapon put into them. In the House, Congressman Casey had introduced an amendment putting substantial additional penalties on persons who used a gun during certain federal crimes, including robbery and assault. So far from exempting bank robberies and armed assaults, the Casey Amendment specifically included them. In the Senate, Senator Dominic introduced a bill which imposed similar penalties for use of guns in any federal crime of violence. And that was defined specifically to include assault with a dangerous weapon and robbery. And Senator Dominic was fully aware that there were statutes which already provided increased penalties, such as 2113D, and said that his amendment was not intended to detract from or repeal those provisions, but would be available to prosecutors in addition to them for stronger penalties if they so desired. Now, the Casey Amendment was replaced by the Poff bill. And then in conference committee, the Poff amendment was used rather than the Dominic amendment. But there is no indication anywhere that the House and Senate as a whole, or the conference committee, of which Congressman Poff, incidentally, was not a member, deliberately endorsed an effort to immunize serious federal crimes, certain serious federal crimes, from the remedies set forth in that act. In fact, given the overall purpose of the Gun Control Act, and given the apparent common understanding of the Poff Amendment and the alternatives in the House and Senate, it is difficult to conceive of language that would express more clearly an intent to strengthen laws relating to the use of guns in all federal felonies.
What's the congressional purpose in the Gun Control Act with respect to bank robberies or with respect to 2113 have been satisfied if the indictment had simply been under 2113A and then 1924C?
Well, some of the Congress, if you assume that the purpose of Congress
if it was
to put
a special penalty on for committing felonies with guns, that would have...
If it's to put a special penalty on, that perhaps would suffice.
If
it was to put an additional and special penalty on,
that would have allowed 30 years instead of 25.
That would have, in that particular case, that's true. However, there are other statutes where it does not work out so cleanly. As we've indicated in other statutes, even within 2113D, the governing felony statute, the larceny statute, would provide for a much lower penalty than 20 years, which is the 2113A. So by adding on the additional penalty, you don't really get up to the same place that you would under 2113D.
Your time has expired now, Mr. Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. No further questions?
You have anything further, Mr. Wilmot?
Mr. Chief Justice, I would like to make one final comment in response to Mr. Justice Stewart's comments. And I think that any time a firearm is used to commit a bank robbery, that you will automatically have the conditions of 924C1 and 2113D satisfied. But that any time a weapon other than a firearm is used, you cannot get a conviction under 924C1. And I will be most happy to make copies of the United States Department of Justice letter, and wherein they refer to United States Attorney Bulletin, Volume 19, Number 3, February 5, 1971, available to Mr. Farr.
Make it available to your friend, and he'll see to it that we get that and anything that may bear directly on it.
Well, what's the date of the letter?
The date of the letter is January 13, 1972, and it refers to the United States.
Is the same bulletin extant now? The same manual? Is it still in effect?
I received this letter through my co-counsel in Lexington, and the letter itself refers to the United States Attorney Bulletin, Volume 19, Number 3, mm-hmm. dated February. I just received this last week before coming up here.
That's the reason for my suggestion you give it to Mr. Farr, because there may be other matters that relate to it and explain it.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next.